Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to ask you a question about the whole Israel-Palestine situation.
That's good.
It's been ignored a great deal in the news from what I've heard.
I don't know.
Which is very little.
I've seen some articles about it, but yeah, probably not.
Not as many as I feel like should be happening.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
So, would you say that I know a lot about the Israel-Palestine situation?
Comparatively, yeah. I know less than you.
So, yeah. In reverse, though, if you were going to use that same logic to apply to our show.
I know a lot about Alex Jones.
I don't know anything about Alex Jones.
And I know.
That was a circuitous route.
It was.
I apologize.
And I know a lot about how we're recording this on Saturday, which is very different because I've got to watch WrestleMania on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, NXT TakeOver New Orleans tonight. Very exciting.
Yep.
Thrilled to see what kind of hijinks these folks pull out. Although it has the potential to be incredibly disappointing. We'll see.
Every single wrestling pay-per-view that you have ever told me about has either been immensely disappointing or
yeah,
it was all right.
Yeah, basically.
You have never been like, this was amazing. It's always been the build-up is so much better for you than the actual product.
Well, that's because I like the storyline aspects of it more than I like the execution. I mean, I like the actual in-ring storytelling and the athleticism of it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not shitting on that.
All right.
But I like imagining what could happen more than I like the actual.
And then when the probability wave function collapses into one future, you get disappointed.
Yeah. And I don't really like wrestling as much as people may think. But be that as it may.
All right. The guy who's about to watch 7 hours of wrestling tomorrow doesn't like wrestling as much as people
think. I'm
going
to be playing Zelda while I do it, articles about Alex Jones while I watch.
All right.
I'm going to be working. Anyway, speaking of working, today I'd put some work in, on this show because as we're recording this on Saturday, there's not a lot of material to cover from, since we recorded on Thursday.
Right.
Thursday's show was a disaster. And then Friday, it was basically a best of episode again. You had Paul Joseph Watson in studio, but he was hosting for a bit. And then they played the really long, video that Alex made when he went out to Ted Nugent's farm.
Great.
And like, I'm not watching this shit.
Great. Yeah, let that one go.
So Friday was kind of like and there's no show on Saturday for us to go over. So I was, it's a classic situation where you gotta scramble, gotta try and figure something out.
Of course.
And so I remembered that back in 2006.
Okay.
What?
All right.
Why is that so crazy?
I just find that you saying, it was very difficult. So I remembered in 2006 as though this is a normal train of thought for somebody to go down.
Well, I'm getting particularly interested in some of like the more formative experiences of Alex Jones's career.
Okay.
And I remember that one of the biggest ones was an interview he did with a guy named Aaron Russo. And, I don't know if you know who that is.
Nope.
But Alex has sort of used it as a foundation of a lot of his narratives. And I realized, hey, maybe we should go take a look at that and see what it looks like through our eyes.
Okay.
So I went back, and that's an hour-long interview, and there's a lot of stuff about 9/11 that I've just sort of left out.
I wish you wouldn't. I have a lot of interesting things to say on 9/11.
But it's all the standard 9/11 truth kind of stuff.
You know, okay.
Like, why won't they tell us about Building 7?
All right.
And that's not all that fun to talk about. Anyway, Aaron Russo, let me tell you about this gentleman.
I think it was an inside job, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you mean by inside job. Exactly.
I think it's just more fun if you think it's an inside job,
more fun until you define what you mean by inside job.
Oh yeah,
job,
then it's trouble all the way.
Then it's time to get slippery.
Then you might as well just write a nice little fiction. Like, I don't think it was perpetrated by the government.
Yeah.
I do think that Cheney set the whole thing up in a Zodiac style situation.
Boy.
No, I wasn't saying Zodiac. I was talking Seven.
Okay.
See, that's what I think is going on. Dick Cheney.
He was Kevin Spacey.
Is Kevin Spacey from Seven.
Okay.
And he is punishing America for their sins.
So that is one of the deadly sins. What was that?
That would.
Avarice?
No, I was just gonna go with, building big, buildings too big.
That's not one of the seven.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the seven.
That is not one of the
seven. That building was too tall.
That could be pride.
Seven deadly sins.
That could be pride.
It could be pride.
You could say that. Anyway.
Right.
Aaron Russo.
Yes.
Yeah, he's right. A gentleman who used to be...
He's guilty of sloth.
Well, no, maybe since 2007 because he's dead.
Okay.
But
see, there you go!
Pretty lazy fucking since death. Yeah, I'd say. So he used to be a Hollywood producer.
Uh-huh.
That's sort of his claim to fame. And he came out, before then as, came to prominence as a producer for Bette Midler.
Alright.
Seems
like a nice guy.
In 1978, he won a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Special, Comedy, Variety, or Music for his work on Bette Midler, Old Redhead is Back. Or Old Red Hair is Back.
Now that is a seminal, special for me.
So that's,
I remember watching that growing up.
Sure.
Just on a loop.
That's
just, Bette Midler, you have done it again.
That's the one award that he has in his IMDb credits.
Right.
To his name. Although he did also produce Trading Places, which is
really,
it's a great movie.
That's an amazing movie.
So he produced that, but the rest of his resume I would call iffy. It includes the 1986 Joe Piscopo classic Wise Guys.
Now, hold on.
Yeah.
It's not good. Not good.
Right.
Did he do the one with Michael Keaton where it was the
Johnny
Dangerously?
No.
Oh, damn it, because then I would really respect
him. But he also did the 1989 Cheech Marin, but not Tommy Chong, stoner movie Rude Awakening, which he also co-directed.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if you know the plot of that one, but it's Cheech Marin and someone who is not Tommy Chong playing hippies who
okay.
have retreated to the woods for years. And then they come back to society to find that all their old hippie friends are now yippies.
Oh, no.
Or yuppies.
It's a classic fish out of water tale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in 19...
How was the direction, though?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I think we're going to have to take a look. I want to see how he places his camera.
The review scores on IMDb are not positive.
No, okay.
They're not... I think it's like a 4.5 out of 10 or something. But he
but
made
it's 7 for directing.
Sure. Sure. 7 generously. In 1991, he made a bit of a pivot in his career and became a bit political, and he made a film. And
So he was a 9/11 truther way too soon.
This wasn't a 9/11 necessarily, but he made what I would call a film, in quotes, called Mad as Hell, which I could not make more than 10 minutes into when I tried to watch it earlier.
All right.
I thought it was just going to be one of these shitty documentaries that people like Alex Jones and his crew make, but it appears to be more like a one-man show.
Okay.
That's being done by someone who has the charisma and the bitterness of a 15-year open micer.
Great.
It's him out on a stage.
Let's definitely not name any names of those people that we know.
No. but I will play you a little clip from Mad as Hell to give you a taste of what kind of energy he was bringing to the table.
All right.
51%, the majority, can take away the rights of 49%, the minority. That's not freedom. Who's ever in office determines.
Bernie? Is this Alex's Bernie impression?
Like a ping pong ball bouncing back and forth, back and forth. One says abortion's legal. One says it's not. One says gun control. Another says no. Taxes are too high. Taxes are too low. Balance the budget in 7 years, 5 years, 9 years, 3 years, 1 year, 18 years. Affirmative action. No affirmative action. Speed limit 55, 75. It's safer. It's not safer. It's insanity!
Wait, why are people applauding?
I told you, it's like a one-man show. It's a live thing.
But even if it is a live thing, why are people applauding?
There's an applause sign. He's in a small theater. And there's just like, it's like, that's a bit. Like,
I mean,
he's doing a bit.
Yeah, clearly. The problem is it doesn't go anywhere or have any resolution to it.
No, and most of those things aren't things.
Or even have a point of view attached to it.
And most of those things that he brings up aren't voted on in like, public elections. And it's like, I sincerely don't understand how any of the things he listed are things where the majority infringes on the rights of the minority.
No.
I especially speed limits, I guess.
Well, you gotta throw speed limits in there though.
Yeah.
That's the real applause line.
So he generally has had a history of just being like,
that entire thing was just like, some people say one thing And other people, they say a different thing.
Right.
That was it. There's nothing to it. He doesn't even draw a conclusion from it or have a point of view on it. He's just observing that people disagree on stuff.
There's no prescriptive quality to it. It's just.
He couldn't even be like, maybe we should have two separate countries. Like, at least there's a thought there, a dumb one, but at least there's a thought.
And let me say that I have to cop to the fact that I had to turn it off because I was so bored.
Yeah, that's awful.
So he may prescribe a solution at some point right there, but I did not get to it. So in 2000...
Now, if you saw my movie where Cheech Marin goes into the woods, we go into the woods!
It's true.
That's a great end for that one-man show.
So then, in 2006, Russo wrote and directed a documentary called America, Freedom to Fascism, which is a foundational piece of Alex Jones's philosophy.
Right.
Alex sold it on the InfoWars store. He references it all the time.
I did not know that.
He claims in the film, he claims that the film had its international premiere to packed audiences, quote, during the Cannes Film Festival.
The during part is very different.
I'm going to read to you from the New York Times. The film was not on the program at Cannes. However, not even for screenings made under the festival's aegis, without being in the competition. Mr. Russo, the film's director, writer, and producer, just set up an inflatable screen on a beach. Photographs posted at one of Mr. Russo's websites depict an audience of fewer than 50 people spread out on a platform on the sand.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is guerrilla filmmaking right there.
It's do-it-yourself kind of shit.
I'm loving it. Mm-hmm. I respect that more than a lot of the people who were in the Cannes Film Festival.
There's a bit of hustle to it, but it's also like that shitty marketing thing where it's like it debuted during Cannes. Like,
I know. That's fun.
Yeah. The film itself is just a mishmash of all sorts of conspiracy bullshit, but it's mostly about how the federal income tax is bullshit.
It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
And how it's illegal.
These guys just don't like a quarter of their paycheck going somewhere else.
Yeah.
They just don't get it.
Yeah. In order to make his arguments, he engages in exactly the same sort of behaviors that we saw Alex do in Endgame. He fabricates quotes, takes sentence fragments out of context in order to make quotes that appear to say something, but in context mean the exact opposite. He treats conjecture and hearsay as the same thing as facts and just makes up sources. One thing that he never brings up in his documentary work or in this interview with Alex Jones that we're about to listen to is that in 2006, when he was making anti-tax documentaries and making sensational claims to market his brand.
Boy, I feel like he has committed a crime of tax fraud or something like that.
He has more than $2 million in tax liens filed against him by the IRS.
There it is. Yeah. Thank you very much.
He kind of has a vested interest in
all this. Maybe a little bit.
So, we will get to this interview, and then along the way, we'll learn a little bit more about Aaron Russo. But it's important to know those sorts of facts up front.
To give you
a little bit of a flavor of where this guy's coming from.
Like, maybe Scientology is really just about L. Ron Hubbard not wanting to pay the enormous amount of taxes he owed on his books.
Possibly.
Could be a little to do with that.
So here's the first clip where Russo talks a little bit about his past and tells a dubious story.
The late 80s. I was a pretty big silver trader and gold trader. And I don't think I've ever told this story on tape before. I was a pretty big silver and gold trader. And I always paid my taxes. And I took what was a legal tax deduction on my silver trades. And a few years later, I think it was 88 or 89 or something, the IRS claimed that what I did, and other people did as well, was now illegal. We couldn't do it anymore. But they made it retroactive.
Can't do that.
So what do you mean retroactive? It was legal then. I did what was legal. So yeah, but it's now we're making it illegal retroactively.
No, that's against the law.
That's not good. So you owe us $600,000 or $800,000. For what? It was legal. How could you make something retroactive? Change the law backwards in time. It makes no sense. Well, we're doing it. And so everybody said they can't do that. So we went to court, a class action lawsuit. And the judge agreed with the IRS and said they could do it retroactively. And that's when I knew that there was something wrong in America with the IRS and the system.
Sure. Sure.
Dan, so listening to that claim, I can clearly surmise that he is telling the truth. So far, he has become nothing but a trustworthy man to
me.
Anyone who works with Joe Piscopo has the highest rating of honesty.
There's no doubt.
Now, I'm sure that you have done research on this claim, and you will absolutely back it up that he is correct.
Well, ex post facto laws, in terms of, like, you making something illegal that wasn't illegal before, have always been illegal.
Right.
You can't do that in terms of criminal or civil cases and stuff like that,
uh-huh.
in terms of those sorts of laws. And most of the arguments that have been made or people have brought cases up about this is like sex offender registries, where people have made the argument that when it became required to register as a sex offender, that's adding punitive consequences on that didn't exist before. And courts have consistently been like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, that's not an extra punishment. It's... I don't know. Anyway, the issue is that with tax stuff, you can do ex post facto laws.
Really?
But typically speaking, that's just because of the way a government works, right? So
it tends
like,
to happen that
let's
way.
Say we have a tax law that ends up getting passed at X point during the year. Generally speaking, what they will do is backdate it to the beginning of the fiscal year. So it's retroactive to the beginning of the year.
Right.
That is the only thing.
It can't go too far.
Right. There's grievous circumstances wherein like, oh yeah, we're going to make this back 20 years. That would never fly.
Okay.
That would never fly. So this is from the Congressional Research Service. Quote, any retroactive tax legislation found to be a criminal penalty will likely be struck down as a violation of the ex post facto clause, which the Supreme Court has done on at least one occasion. In extremely rare circumstances, tax legislation that seems to target certain taxpayers might raise concerns under the equal protection guarantees of the Fifth Amendment. Finally, it might also be asked whether such legislation is an unconstitutional bill of attainder. When there do not appear to be any instances of this occurring, it seems possible that a retroactive tax legislation could, depending on its specifics, meet the criteria to be a bill of attainder. So those are the only circumstances wherein, you know, you'd have, crimes being done by retroactive tax things.
Right, right.
And so, his story doesn't check out, all that well. I don't necessarily believe the line that he's spitting. I think it's probably a thing where it was like, it's backdated to the beginning of this fiscal year, and he's like, ah, shit.
Yeah.
I gotta pay a bunch more than I wanted to pay.
Exactly.
I'm going to create a mythology out of this.
Well,
when
whenever,
in reality, it's just kind of how the tax code works.
Whenever he said, I've never told this story before. Back in the 80s and 90s, I was a big gold and silver trader, and I always paid my taxes. That's that Alex Jones moment where you're like, ah! You already said that, which kind of means that you know that you didn't.
Right, right. I have to preload this.
Yeah, exactly. Before I tell you this long-winded fictional story, let me start by saying I always paid my taxes. That's just a given.
He had a $2 million tax lien in 2006, but, so that begs some questions. A
little bit.
So whether or not he pays his taxes is an irrelevant issue to this next clip where he explains that he doesn't believe in taxes. But he's not going to tell people not to pay their taxes.
Well, that's a good legal gray area right there.
You don't advise people to not pay. And I do the same thing. People say, well, wait, you're saying it's a scam, but you're saying go ahead and pay it. And I like the way you summed it up.
Well, it's really fairly simple. I mean, since making that movie, you know, many people come to me and ask me whether they should pay their income taxes or not. You know, and I never advise people not to pay. And the reason I tell them, I say, look, I've done a lot of research. There isn't, the Supreme Court has ruled that the IRS has no authority. The 16th Amendment
what?
Did not give the IRS the authority to tax your labor and your wages. That's a fact.
Nope.
The Supreme Court is the law of the land, you know, and the IRS does not trump the Supreme Court. However, that being the case, the fact is if the mafia would come to you and say, we want $2,000 a month that we're going to hurt you, I would not advise you not to pay them. Because you may get hurt by not paying them. Whether it's legal or not doesn't necessarily matter.
Okay. Interesting. Now I'd like to read you literally the 16th Amendment.
All right.
Quote, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived.
Not labor.
Without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. I would argue that taxes on incomes from whatever source derived does include your labor. because that would be your income.
What source is that, though?
I don't know. But so there's a lot of people who have tried in the years to call out and claim that there's problems with the 16th Amendment's ratification. One of them is that Ohio wasn't a state when it was ratified.
Oh, well, then Ohio's not subject to the rules.
But at the time, you would have needed 36 states to ratify it to pass as an amendment, and they had 41, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you throw Ohio in there.
Yeah, then you have 40 out of 36.
Yeah, see, there you go.
So, I mean, that's bunk.
You have to do the whole thing over again. So, every time we get a new state, it has to be a do-over on all of our amendments.
Sure.
Everybody knows that. That's,
yeah,
that's the 48th Amendment.
Yeah.
The do-over amendment.
Let's reconsider it.
Bring it back up!
And so one of the most prominent anti-tax petitioners who operated on 16th Amendment concerns was a guy by the name of William J. Benson. He wrote a book called the biggest law that never was or something like that. He's another one of these guys kind of.
Well, it's an amendment, not really a law.
Sure. He's one of these guys who is sort of like in the Irwin Schiff mold of like writing books that say you don't have to pay taxes. It's really dangerous. His sort of rhetoric. But his argument was that the text of the amendments that were ratified in different states varied in so much as the spelling of words, differing capitalization, and stuff like that.
Hey, all caps isn't your real human being.
Right, it's that.
All caps is your legal entity, and I've gotten rid of all caps.
Right, so he made...
I'm not MF Doom.
He made the argument that because of these capitalization and punctuation differences, that the ratification of the 16th Amendment was null and void.
See, and now we learn, children, why the semicolon is so important.
Absolutely.
If they
the
had
Oxford
used,
comma?
If they had used the semicolon, we would have to pay taxes, but they didn't.
Yeah. So that was considered back during the ratification times, even, and it was a criticism that they took. And we're like, this doesn't matter. And so that was already ruled on in terms of like that being a valid reason to think that income tax was not legal.
The ruling was essentially, dude, have you read this writing? They used commas all over the fucking place back then. Their F's were S's. I don't know what these people were talking
it's
about.
It's crazy.
They look at that shit. You can't hold them accountable for it.
So based on this stupid argument, he stopped paying his taxes, and naturally, he eventually was convicted of tax evasion and willful failure to file tax returns, for over $100,000 of unreported income.
Okay.
On December 17th, 2007, the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois ruled that Benson's non-ratification argument constituted a, quote, fraud perpetrated by Benson, that had, quote, caused needless confusion and a waste of the consumers and the IRS's time and resources.
I like it.
Yeah. So,
he got sentenced for being a douchebag.
Well, because this argument has already been dealt with. And if you're using that as your legal backing for your I don't want to pay my taxes shit, you're doing that in full awareness that this question has been settled.
That?
And so this stuff, like this stuff legitimately that Aaron Russo is peddling on the show is demonstrably not true and has been dealt with in the courts over and over and over again to the point where people who have these anti-tax arguments, they sound really good until you look into the actual details and then you realize that people keep going to court for this stuff and they lose every time.
It usually happens.
Yeah, they lose every time.
Like those remind me so much of that kind of the wealth gospel preachers that go on TV where it's like, "Oh, if you just give us a little bit of money, your life will be blessed." Mm-hmm. And he's selling his book under the same premise, but if you do what he says, when you buy his book, you just wind up going to jail for it.
Basically. And that was actually even addressed in the court hearings about how, like, he's perpetrating a scam on people, in such a way that is dangerous to them, and he knows. He knows or has reason to know that that's what he's doing.
Right.
So there's one case, a guy named, Lloyd Long, who always gets referenced as like he went to court and he made the argument that
Lloyd Long?
Yeah.
Where do these people come from?
I don't know, double L. So he ended up winning a court case. He was one of the only ones that tax protesters reference.
All right.
But there's a lot of problems with this because he ended up losing the civil case that was attached to it and ended up still being liable to pay all the taxes that he hadn't paid.
Right.
But he won a case wherein it was a court a jury case. And all they did was prove, or they decided, that he wasn't willfully breaking the law. And so they didn't find him guilty of intentional.
They found him guilty of stupidity.
Basically, yes. Yeah. That's okay. Long and short of it.
Right.
And subsequent attempts to use that as precedent have been like, oh, good God, no. And so, like, all of this stuff is so crazy.
I like the idea of using that as precedent, too. It's just like, well, that guy was stupid.
Right.
What do you think, I'm not?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
That's more or less the holy grail of these tax protesters' nonsense arguments. So in this next clip, we already got a little bit of a taste of this, of Russo in his one-man show that we listened to a bit
right.
of. The idea that, like, majority...
Well, some people pay taxes, and other people don't!
Well, like, the majority...
Sometimes you do!
And
sometimes you don't!
Okay. I'm referring more to the majority rule aspect.
Right.
And he's gonna get into that, but before he does... He's got to do his best impression of, college sophomores sitting around smoking a joint, talking politics in
all
their
right.
dorm room.
All right, here we go.
The American people are living in a matrix. They don't understand the truth of how things are working in this country. You know, and let me give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Please do.
The very fact is that if you ask 100 people on the street, what kind of government is America supposed to be? 99% of them will tell you a democracy. America is supposed to be a democracy. But that's a lie. That's an illusion. The word democracy Ooh. Is not written into the Constitution
Heavy.
At one time. It's not in the Bill of Rights.
Okay.
It's not in the Declaration of Independence. The Founding Fathers hated the idea of a democracy.
Which is why they
created the worst form of government
there
is. And I agree with them. Because in a democracy, 51% of the people control 49% of the people. If you're part of the 49%, you're not free. America was founded as a constitutional republic. And in that constitutional republic that we have, 99% of the people can't take away the rights of 1%. You have your rights because you were born with them. You have God-given human rights.
I got bad news about republics.
I really don't like this whole "you have rights because God gave them to you" thing.
I mean, if you want to say he's using that metaphorically, it's fine. It's the idea of intrinsic human rights, which I support. But I understand where you're coming from. In a republic, you could still have the representatives, 51% of them, overruling 49% of
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Like a representative.
Oh, are you saying that there have been multiple decisions in the Senate where it was 51 to 49?
Tons of them.
Oh,
and some
crazy.
Of them took away people's rights.
They took away the rights.
Also, Supreme Court decisions could go
5-4.
There's certainly instances of that.
Do you mean where they steal elections?
Right. I mean, or even like if you go back, I know I've harped on this a little bit before, but like, I can't remember what year it was exactly, but it's certainly in the mid to later 1900s, there was a Supreme Court decision that upheld that women couldn't work as bartenders in bars that weren't owned by a male relative.
Yeah, but that just makes sense.
Right, but that's taking away a right based on majority rule in a Supreme Court decision.
You know, but God didn't give you the right to work at a bar.
That's true, if you're a woman.
That's not an intrinsic human right, Dad.
Well, if you're a man, it is.
Oh, there you go.
If you're a woman, no.
Well, it's like, because women have one less rib or something? I don't know. I don't know how
lines.
God works like that.
And they bleed. They're weak. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand because like
I don't want to get a drink from anything that bleeds once a month and doesn't die, right? Like that's the old saying.
Any of his complaints about the majority rule aspect of a democracy is exactly the same as arguments that could be levied against a majority rule in a republic. Now, be that as it may.
It's an argument against any majority rule whatsoever, which is an argument against...
No, it's an argument against representation.
It's an argument against government entirely by anything other than a fascist dictator.
That stealthily might be what's being advocated
for. Yeah, pretty much.
In spirit, I think a lot of these libertarian folk end up accidentally advocating for exactly that.
Fascism.
Under the pretense of individual
Nothing
rights
is more individually free than having one guy tell you what to do.
Right.
That's individual freedom, Dan.
Right. But, I mean, like, I don't even know how to deal with that kind of nonsense. Because, like, you couldn't vote, like, let's say, you have a right to employment, or whatever. You have the right to seek employment.
Okay.
As a person who lives in the United States.
Yeah, God gave us that one.
Now, let's say 51% of the public came out to vote, and were like, alright, you can't look for work anymore.
Right.
That wouldn't fly.
I don't
know. You know what I mean? Like, even gun stuff, you couldn't vote on that. No one, there's no way that would fly.
No, there's a massive majority for gun control, and right. We still can't get it.
Abortion is not an issue that would be on a ballot and get passed.
Nope. But there's a massive majority that wants abortion, unrestricted right. In the same way.
So, like, all of this just is empty to me. It's just, his words are empty. And when you consider he is not some kind of, like, judicial scholar, he's not a professor, he's a guy who was Bette Midler's manager.
Well, yeah.
And then directed and produced a Cheech Marin
movie.
Yeah,
but don't you know that Bette Midler only hires the greatest legal minds to assist her on anything?
That could be the case.
Her PA has argued multiple courses in the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's, now good. They, That's
now,
good to know.
Now she gets coffee.
So in this next clip, we learn that the New World Order is actually democracy. What?
What?
But you ask the most intelligent people what form of government America is supposed to be, they'll say democracy. Because that's what they've been brainwashed. They've been psyoped into believing that.
Oh,
they believe
psyops.
That we're in Iraq. They believe we're in Iraq to promote democracy. The word democracy, you hear George Bush saying democracy means freedom.
Real quick, I'll tell you who didn't believe that. Liberals in 2002, 2003. This is Aaron Russo in 2006. This is already a tired line of rhetoric based on, like, protests that I was involved in Columbia, Missouri, that, I mean, had to have been much bigger in other cities. But, like, I experienced this. These words of, like, this democracy thing is a sham. This argument is nonsense.
Yeah.
Is something that was very well-traveled territory for people on the other side from people like these guys.
Yeah, pretty much.
No. Democracy equals New World Order. Democracy equals slavery. The word democracy is not synonymous with freedom. It's the opposite of freedom.
If the United States
So what's
is
synonymous a, if, with freedom?
If the United States is a republic in the way he's saying it, and, you know, democracy is slavery, why did we have slavery for a really fucking long time? Back when the original founders of our republic were the ones who were literally ruling the place.
Well,
why is that the case?
Well, God gave them different rights.
Right.
See?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. God-given rights.
Democracy is the worst form of government you can have because it's majority rule.
Majority.
And the government can tell you exactly what they want to tell you to do. Because the majority wants it. I don't care what the majority wants. I live my life as I choose. And if I don't commit violence,
do what thou
theft,
wilt?
Or fraud against another human being, I can live my life as I wish.
So you can't commit fraud.
Right.
I got bad news about the show you're on.
Explain to me why it is they always pick the ones they're doing.
Well, to be fair, that's a pretty consistent libertarian
exactly.
position because it's that, like, if I commit violence against you, then I am encroaching on your rights. If I steal something from you, I'm encroaching on your right to property. And if I commit fraud against you, I'm stealing from you through wordcraft
and
or whatever.
Simultaneously, they hold the belief that it was always out of self-defense.
Right.
That shit was mine to begin with.
Right.
And it's on you to laissez-faire, man. Come on, suck it up.
Nope, totally. It's all...
They tend to not give a shit when it comes down to their behavior. It's really all they do.
It's a big old, let's play both sides of this coin kind of mentality.
Yep.
So, but also, like, legitimately, he's saying there at the end, I can't commit fraud, but otherwise I can do whatever I want.
Right.
You're committing fraud.
Yeah.
You just said,
As he's talking.
You just said that the 16th Amendment doesn't apply to the ability for the government to collect taxes.
Right.
Just because they use the IRS now as a government entity to do that does not mean that the 16th Amendment is somehow being violated. And courts have consistently ruled on this.
This is like
that's
one
a
of those,
fraud. He's that's a fraud. He's
this
perpetuating.
Is like one of those things where a guy is trying to use the insanity defense, and before he actually goes to trial, he's trying to act it up as he's all crazy,
dude.
Like that's exactly like he's doing the stupidity defense, but he's just throwing it out there. Like, see, look how dumb I am.
That's what Irwin.
You can't say this was willful. I'm stupid. Look at this interview.
That's what Irwin Schiff tried to do at the in one of his last appeals.
Uh-huh.
He was trying to say that he suffered from a delusion that he believed that he was the only person who could interpret tax law correctly.
All right.
And
I like it.
This got blown
I'm
up.
I'm loving it.
This got blown up in his face because one of his co-defendants in the case sent out an email to their supporters saying that we hate to have to use this kind of a defense, but So.
Wait, what?
It was like a Hail Mary kind of thing to try and get him out of prison.
Yeah, but you can't email the invalidation of your defense.
You think that it's only going to your supporters and they're the only ones who are going to see it.
Man, but that's not how that works.
Nope.
Oh boy.
Nope. So anyway, that's kind of funny that's where your brain
see,
went.
See, now he should have gotten off for being too stupid.
Wow. Yeah.
If you send an email like that, that's the best evidence for you're too stupid to be willfully lying.
He didn't send it. It was the other, co-defendant.
Well, then throw the book at
everyone. They also went to prison.
Yeah. Oh, who would have guessed?
So in this next clip, hey, what do you know? This fucking Aaron Russo commits another fraud on air.
Great.
What happens is now the government borrows money from them to fund the government. Then the government says, well, we have to pay these people interest.
He's talking about the Federal Reserve.
How are we going to pay them interest? Let's impose a tax on the labor of the American people, which never existed before, to pay the interest of the bankers.
In fact, in 1980, Ronald Reagan said not one red cent of your income tax money goes to run the country. It all goes to the Federal Reserve.
Well, it was the Gresh Commission report that said that not one nickel goes to the infrastructure of the country.
So that's fun. What do you know about the Grace Report, the Grace Commission report that Reagan put through?
I don't know. I know it's almost certainly stupid.
So this is
if it's associated with Ronald Reagan, it would definitely not be prosecuted for willful anything.
Aaron Russo and Alex Jones in that clip both are perpetuating an idea that in the report they found and Reagan has said that none of your income tax money goes to paying any programs or anything. It all goes to paying off interest to these bankers, these international bankers and the Federal Reserve.
Oh, yeah, the 5G bankers. From.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll read the quote to you from the report because I read way
too
much on
this.
Can
you do it in Ronald Reagan's voice?
I can't do that.
Oh, come on.
I don't know how to do impressions.
Give it a shot.
Nancy. Nope. Not good.
I like it.
So here's the quote from the report that they're misusing. Quote, with two-thirds of everyone's personal income tax wasted or not collected, 100% of what is collected is absorbed solely by interest on the federal debt and by federal government contributions to transfer payments. In other words, all individual income tax revenues are gone before one nickel is spent on the services that taxpayers expect from their government. Now, it's important that what is actually being said there is more to the effect of everything is getting wasted. As you see that at the beginning there, two-thirds of everyone's personal income tax wasted or not collected. And it's important to consider what Reagan considered wasting of tax money. Because that's a very important
paying
context.
Human beings?
So,
building roads?
So this is
remembering
not,
anything?
This is everything except jelly beans.
Everything except jelly beans.
That's not a waste.
Yeah.
So this is not saying what Russo is claiming it's saying.
But it is good that your taxpayer money is illegally funding Iran.
So the Grace Commission, which itself cost taxpayers $75 million, found that there was $424 billion of waste in government spending. That this quote that Russo extracts doesn't take into account, is that that number is cited in the report. Now, what's the waste? What sort of recommendations did this commission come out with? I read the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, assessment of the – I didn't want to read the entire commission report because it's like 600 fucking pages long or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no way.
And there's no way Aaron Russo or Alex Jones read that either.
It's too long.
But the CBO assessment found and listed off a bunch of the things that the Grace Commission considered waste and was part of that $424 billion they could just get away with.
The Department of the Interior.
No, that's more.
The Energy Department.
That's Ron Paul stuff.
State Department. Clearly we're in that world again.
So here's some of the suggestions they had. Quote, reduce food stamp child nutrition overlap.
Oh, can't have that.
Consolidate student loan programs. Sell unneeded public land. Modify federal employees' health benefit program. Now, you kind of get the sense that some of those are probably code. How are you going to save money modifying the federal employees' health care benefit program?
Oh, you're going to modify it.
You're going to get rid of a lot of it.
I can't imagine that. You're just going to modify it.
Consolidating student loan programs is probably let's pinch these kids or...
You're going to modify them.
Right. Modify it.
Yeah, you're just going to put them together.
Reduce civil service retirement benefits.
Oh, you can't let them have that.
Hmm. Repeal or modify Davis-Bacon Act, which is a 1931 United States federal law that establishes the requirement for paying the locally prevailing wages for public works progress for laborers and mechanics.
Great.
Get rid of that.
Great. Yeah.
Also,
repeal
or modify Walsh-Healy Public Contract Act, which establishes minimum wage, maximum hours, and safety and health standards for workers on contracts in excess of $10,000 for the manufacturing or furnishing of materials, supplies, articles, or equipment to the U.S. government. So again, it's another one of those let's cut corners by fucking people.
Yeah.
Because it's also for contracts over $10,000, so you can reasonably assume that the people who are getting those larger contracts could probably absorb some of that, you know, but it'll be passed down to the individual laborers. They're getting fucked.
Of course.
So also, phase out VA healthcare facility construction.
Oh, well, you gotta get rid of those.
Get rid of the benefits for the VA.
Hey, you can't have that.
No, just put them in a public hospital.
Look,
they can take care of them.
They fight and die for our country, which you find to be so important. But when they're done, they're done. You can't care about them after that.
Also, restrict federal employee disability benefits.
Well, and what if they get hurt? Then we'd have to pay for it.
That's bullshit.
If we get rid of those benefits, they won't get hurt.
Bullshit.
That's an airtight argument, Dan.
Reduce.
They just don't have a financial incentive not to get hurt.
Reduce paid annual leave benefits for federal employees.
Where are they going?
Make them work more. Fuck it.
Where do you need to go? Come on, man.
From the New York Times, I read an article from 1984 while this was going on. It says, quote, one of the reasons it's not possible, at least at this stage, to calculate actual or likely total savings from the commission's work is that many of these ideas were already under consideration. Hey. So $75 million was spent to end up with a lot of conclusions that Reagan and his shithead friends already wanted to do. Just to give rationalization to it. And the things that you see in it are largely get rid of helping programs.
Yeah.
So the idea that...
Well, that's what the taxpayers don't want to see their money go towards.
No, but don't you understand this elaborate fraud that is against libertarian ideas that Aaron Russo is perpetuating with the help, very complicit help of Alex Jones, is this idea that all of your income tax, it just goes to pay off the interest on federal debts when that's not the case. This report, he's using it incorrectly.
It goes to pay your friends.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That report explicitly doesn't say that. It's fucking bullshit. Anyway, I'm furious about that.
Yeah, well, you know, we all need to recognize Reagan was one of our great presidents. City on the Hill speech.
Come on,
it was a shining city. It was on that hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get up on top of that hill is to stand on top of the dead corpses of the poor.
Yeah,
everybody knows this.
Like the Grace Commission report is like, It being used in this context is infuriating if you care about people and if you care about the truth.
Right.
If all you care about is trying to push bogus anti-tax, anti-Federal Reserve narratives, it's manna from heaven because it's really easy to misrepresent.
Oh, yeah.
And ain't nobody going to read that 600 pages.
It's not just easy to misrepresent. Even if you follow up on it, you're like, well, yeah, these are great ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, like that kind of a thing. Of course you want to use the report that says fuck over the poor and be like, see, they're fucking over the poor.
Yeah. In this next clip, they talk about how evil it is that taxes are just taken out of your check.
Oh, you should have to write them a letter every time.
Indeed.
And so now they've even taken control of the tax, the tax payment itself. I mean, literally like you're a slave. They're taking it right there when you make it.
Exactly.
They don't even trust the public enough to go
send them
pay
a check.
Yeah.
Right. So they take it out automatically because they know people aren't going to want to pay it.
No shit. That's my response to that. No fucking shit.
Yeah.
Do you understand how difficult it would be to operate any sort of organization with just like, yeah, good faith. You guys will take care of it. Like the massive number of people who are like Alex or like Aaron Russo who just be like, I'm gonna see if I can get away with this.
Even when the people are filling out their tax returns, there's still a shit ton of like, I bet if I just claim that I have a child, nobody's gonna ask.
They can't look into that.
Yeah, come on. What are you guys gonna do? Show up at my house?
I had a home birth.
Hey!
But see, like, the other thing too is that, like, if you had that system in place where it's on you to send in your taxes, you would end up creating a much larger tax system.
Right.
Because then you'd have to have tons of investigators. You'd have to have tons of people who go out and like, hunt people down for not paying their taxes.
Yeah, but we could afford it if we didn't have to pay them minimum wage or take care of their benefits. Mm-hmm. See, it all makes sense at the end of the day. Have roving tax collectors right. making $6 an hour, and then you're good.
What he's
zero government waste.
What he's accidentally advocating for is the diametric opposite of what he wants. He wants a smaller tax system. And that would create a huge tax system.
But these are
that would
all...
that would lead to audits having to happen for almost everybody on a regular basis.
Yeah,
because I guess they just don't want to pay taxes.
These guys, yeah, exactly. Just say you don't want to pay taxes.
I mean, they are.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just the stupid intellectualizing of it
right.
that goes back to these ideas that are bogus. That are misrepresenting actual cases.
It's so much of the Christian response to evolution. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever they, like, if you go to the Creation Museum, it's not just like, well, we reject their science. It's like, their science is wrong! Ha ha ha! We fooled ya!
Yeah.
They thought they knew science with their doing it. And we can just, we lived at the same time as dinosaurs. You saw the Flintstones?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go!
So.
God.
Jordan, are you ready for this to take a huge turn?
I'm not, because I really think that every time somebody with a southern accent says the word slave, they should have to pay a dollar.
Fair.
I think that's a reasonable thing
to say. Reduce government waste.
Exactly.
So in this next clip, everything.
I'll pay somebody minimum wage to go around and collect dollars from people in the South saying the word slave.
Sure. Everything changes in this next clip. We've talked a lot about taxes up till this point.
Yes.
And now everything changes.
We get back to the news?
I had a friend, Nick Rockefeller, okay, who was one of the Rockefeller family.
All right.
And he, when I was running for governor in Nevada, he came to me, introduced himself to me through an attorney, and, we became friends. We started talking about things, and, I learned an awful lot from Mr. Rockefeller. And one of the things that we used to talk about was the ultimate plan of the banking industry, what they wanted to accomplish.
So what do you think about that, my friend?
Well, I mean, the Rockefeller was clearly recruiting him for the globalists.
Mm-hmm.
And this is while he's running for governor, correct? Mm. Ah, see, now Alex is going to correctly call him out on his bullshit, and he's going to say, no, you were recruited by the globalists. What do you have to say about that, Aaron? Aaron. You have tried to take over through globalist means. Clearly, you have learned something from this, and now you are coming back to me, Alex Jones, to rectify this mistake. You're going to tell us the secrets behind the globalists and how it is that they recruit people like you, people who clearly have good ideas, and they're twisting and turning these good ideas into something evil. What do the banking industries want to do? What globalist secrets did Rockefeller tell you?
You're onto some interesting threads that'll continue as we go along. What you should know is, this guy, Nick Rockefeller, may or may not exist as Aaron Russo describes him.
Okay. From what is, is there a Nick Rockefeller?
From what is available research, because there is a picture of him with a guy who is, purportedly, and seems to be a guy named Nick Rockefeller, who is a lawyer.
That is not enough.
He's a lawyer.
That's not enough evidence.
He may or may not be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, but it's not clear whether he is a term member or a permanent member. He might just be someone who joined for business contacts or something like that.
Right.
Because if you look at the role of members, it's a ridiculously huge list of people. That doesn't prove shit, to me at all. There's no evidence that I can find that he's related to the Rockefellers.
There's where we run into an issue here.
Yeah.
That could be a big deal.
That's a big issue.
That might be a big deal.
I also cannot find any, evidence that he's on Rockefeller Records. I don't.
All right. All right.
Fuck you.
All right, Dan.
So I'll stick to the facts.
That's what everybody wants you here for. They don't need you for Rockaware.
No. In 1998, Aaron Russo ran for the governorship of Nevada as a Republican. Russo placed second in the Republican primary, winning about 26% of the vote. He would go on to endorse the Democratic candidate in the general election, who would go on to lose to Kenny Gwynne, who would beat Russo in the primary.
Ah.
So he's all over the place there. In 2004, Russo...
He takes things personally, and he was like, that guy beat me. Fuck that guy.
It's possible that was the motivation. I have no idea.
I'm listening to Aaron Russo's voice, and he's a guy who takes things personally.
It's possible. So in 2004, he tried to run for president as a libertarian. He won the first round of voting in the libertarian primary by 2 votes, which was not a large enough margin to name him the candidate coming out of the convention. So they had another ballot, and he would go on to lose the final ballot by 89 votes, 423 to 344. So
huge, the Libertarian Party.
In 2004, at that point, he'd already been diagnosed with bladder cancer.
Okay.
And that's what he ends up dying a year after, or about a year after this interview with Alex Jones.
Uh-huh.
He'd already been suffering from cancer, struggling with cancer for years.
Right.
And I think that might inform some of the claims he's making, because he has a $2 million tax lien, and he has been battling cancer for years. I think that not to say that...
Boy, it sure seems like he would benefit from more government spending on healthcare.
It would also...
Instead of perhaps being unable to afford both healthcare and taxes.
It would also appear that he would stand to benefit from creating a documentary that's poorly sourced called America Freedom to Fascism, and then creating a niche market for himself by going on Alex Jones's show and saying that he knows a Rockefeller who told him all the secrets. It seems like that is a pretty good gamble to make.
Okay.
That you're going to make a lot of money from that.
Now,
and I believe he may have.
Now, prove to me that Larry Nichols existed before 2006.
I think I can. I
think Aaron Russo faked his own death and became Larry Nichols.
No,
I can hear it in the voice.
No, because of Larry Nichols' involvement in the early Clinton scandals and Troopergate and stuff like that.
Where was Aaron Russo at the time?
I don't know. He was running for governor of Nevada. He was.
You've never seen him in the same room, is my point, Dan.
He was producing a Cheech Marin joint. That's what he was doing.
Larry Nichols wrote jingles. Same thing.
Holy shit.
Same thing. We've
Larry
seen
Nichols
the connection.
Larry scored the movie. That's probably not the case.
Larry Nichols did ghostwrite most of Bette Midler's songs, though.
So, in this next clip, we get to learn a little bit of what this mysterious Nick Rockefeller told Aaron Russo.
Yes.
About the globalist's plan. Although, notice, not using the term globalist. He's talking about international bankers.
Right.
So, the ultimate goal that these people have in mind is the goal to create a one-world government.
Bing.
Run by the banking industry, run by the bankers, and they're doing it in sections. The European currency, the euro, and the European constitution is one part of it. Now they're trying to do it in America with the North American Union, right? And they want to create a new currency called the Amero, right?
That hasn't
and,
worked.
To who?
The whole agenda is to create a one world government where everybody has an RFID chip implanted in them.
Gotta.
All money is to be in those chips.
Okay. Right? Sounds
no
at all like
cash.
An argument to go back on a gold standard coming from a former gold salesman.
Ha!
And all money will be in your chips. And so instead of having
which
cash,
which will be provided by Ruffles,
anytime you have money in your chip,
the
they can take out
chip.
Whatever they want to take out whenever they want to.
So that's the plan. I find this disappointing slightly.
You know why? Mainly because I'm pretty sure we do, to some extent, have an international, one world government that is run by the bankers, insofar as the entire economic system of the world is interconnected
sure.
through bankers.
Some of that's inevitable, though. Like,
yeah.
I mean, even in a perfect, very mindful way of organizing society, like the way that you know, capitalism exists, that is an inevitable conclusion of
exactly.
it, because eventually you need to get into other markets then. I mean, capitalism has a vested, not even interest, it has a necessity of growth.
That is entirely what it's about.
And because of that, you can't ever, like at the highest levels of it, you can't just limit yourself to your area. And even if you did, you'd still need trade.
Yeah, capitalism
you'd still
is,
need resources from other places.
Capitalism is a is almost a disease. Like it spreads and it only
it's
has
like
one
bladder
desire.
Cancer.
Yeah, it's a lot like bladder cancer.
Yeah,
and then it pees all over our assholes.
Right.
I mean,
you know
also,
what? You know what?
Also, how bad of an idea is a one world government, and how bad of an idea is the RFID chip?
Well, RFID chips wouldn't work for that purpose, just based on the technology.
Of course not. But the spiritual idea behind what it is they're saying.
It's like having a fucking debit card, you know? I mean...
Pretty much exactly like having a debit card.
If I lose my debit card, I'm fucked. You know what I mean? Like, I can't buy or sell without a debit card. And that's not something evil. I can also use it to get currency out of an ATM.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know, like it, there's convenience issues that it does address. But I think it would never, I think no self-respecting world government would ever go for that just because of how hacky it is. You know what I mean?
It is hacky.
It's the kind of thing, it's like, well, this is going to trigger the most aggressive, angry, gun-toting,
enemies we have.
Let's not go down that road.
Right. Let's give it to them in something they can hold.
Well, I mean,
seeing as how all of our debit cards have computer chips inside of them that function in the exact same way as what it is he's describing.
And there's
so evil.
And there's already chips in like passports now,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So I mean,
and what's your business with like? I think the only
a lot of people's pets have chips in them,
right?
So I mean,
I think the only issue with a one world government is what government it is.
Right.
Like, I don't want a one world government run by Xi Jinping,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
I don't want a one world government run by those guys. I don't want a one world government run by the United States either.
No, but that's
like the problem is the problem with one world government is that most governments around the world are shit.
Well, even if you take the world government aspect out of it, like, I don't want our government being run this way. I don't want China's government being run that way. It's not an issue of scale. It's an issue of these are bad.
I don't think countries are anywhere near as important as their shitty governments that are fucking everybody over.
And that's why even if having a central one world government would be necessarily not the worst thing ever, it's a very bad thing to look for now because of the unevolved state of all the world's governments.
Exactly.
With the exception of some places in like Scandinavia. Maybe.
The only difference between a one world government now and what we have is that instead, everybody in the world would just be fucked over in the same way.
See, now,
instead of in their own unique ways.
See, that touches on what, the fear is, the capital F fear of the one world government that Alex and his ilk have. And that is that if there is a unified one world government, there's nowhere you can go. So like, if fascism took over in America and it became a horrible authoritarian state, you could still run away to Europe or something like that.
Right.
Whereas if there was a unified one world government, then you would never be able to escape it without getting off the planet, which at this point you couldn't do as a citizen.
Bah.
So
in 2006, in Alex Jones' world in 2018, of course you can.
Absolutely.
Mars bases.
Right. Absolutely. Well, no, not really.
Don't
paint him with that brush.
That's one space world government.
Yeah, don't paint him with that brush.
Okay.
But like, so I get that fear, and that for similar reasons, to what you were espousing about most governments being flawed, I don't support the creation of one world government, but just from very different reasons than Alex, and I don't think it's going that way.
No.
I don't think the fact that the euro exists is evidence
of
that.
It's going hard the opposite way currently.
There have not been sincere efforts to create the Amero. I know it's been discussed, but it's always been roundly rejected just based on the complications that would come from
just how currency works.
Well, and the differences of opinion between countries like Canada, America, Mexico, there's no way they'd be able to come to a agreement about how it should be laid out.
Right.
It just wouldn't. It every time it gets suggested, it's like, no.
Well, and that's not least of which because countries themselves are not unified blocks. Mm-hmm. Like, so as much as your identity may be, I'm American or I'm Canadian, the guys in Canada who are like, government isn't real, are more in the same country as the guys in America who are like, government isn't real, as opposed to people along those lines. Like, the country isn't the difference between those two people.
And that's an argument for globalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because our borders are abstract ideas that don't
I think
mean
it's
anything.
An argument for segregation, and I don't like it now.
Well, I disagree with your assessment.
All I'm saying is that we should put people like Alex into one camp.
Well, no. Because, but think about it.
Let's give them a state. Let's give them Arizona. Look, if you don't think there should be a government, you get Arizona. There's no government there. You guys figure your own shit out, and everybody else will be fine.
The ultimate irony would be if, like, there was a North American union that ended up happening, and because Texas is so bullheaded, they're like, all right, we secede.
Right.
And then they are the thing that links the entire thing. Would just be like, you have one little sovereign state in the middle that blocks the rest of the United States from Mexico.
To a certain extent, California. That almost makes
other
sense.
Southern states.
That almost makes sense because then if you were one of those assholes living in Canada, you'd be like, well, I could just go to this non-government place.
Right.
But because I'm staying here, I'm tacitly admitting that government is a good thing.
Hmm. I don't know if we're going to come to a resolution to this, but it is more fun than talking
about
Aaron Russo.
I think Arizona is shit, and let's give them whatever they want.
Arizona has some delightful rock formations. I've enjoyed it many times in
my
life.
That's
true. I love it.
We should take back their land.
Okay. in this next clip, we get to hear a shocking revelation of Aaron Russo's that comes from mysterious Nick Rockefeller.
Ah.
Eric, can you be specific about when you met Rockefeller, how it happened in these discussions?
I met Rockefeller through a female attorney I knew who called me up one day and said, one of the Rockefellers would like to meet you. I had made a video called Mad as Hell, and he'd seen the video and wanted to meet me and knew I was running for governor of Nevada. So sure, I'd love to meet him. And I met him, and I liked him, and he was a very, very smart man. And we used to talk and share ideas and thoughts. And he's the one who told me 11 months before 9/11 ever happened that there was going to be an event. Never told him what the event was going to be. But there was going to be an event. And out of that event, we were going to invade Afghanistan.
It was actually Woodstock 99.
To run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We were going to invade Iraq. You know, to take over the oil fields, establish a base in the Middle East, and make it all part of the New World Order. And we go after Chavez in Venezuela. And sure enough, later 9/11 happened. And I remember he was telling me how how you're going to see soldiers looking in caves for people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and all these places.
Was he a psychic?
And there's going to be this war on terror, which is no real enemy. And the whole thing is a giant hoax, you know, but it's a way for the government to take over the American people.
He told you it was going to be a hoax.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question. He says, there's going to be war and terror. And he's just laughing. There's no, who are we fighting? I mean, why do you think 9/11 happened and then nothing's happened since then?
Nothing. So anyway, that's a little silly. Here's the problem with this. Here's the problem.
I know why 9/11 happened.
But also nothing happened since is a ridiculous thing to argue. And if you're just saying that, why haven't they taken over more planes? I don't know, because fucking security got clamped down real fucking hard. Now, the other thing is all of this.
Also, it became hack.
All of the stuff that he's saying in this interview in 2006 is stuff that has happened since 9/11. He's just using his awareness of what has happened since then and pretending that he knew it 11 months before. Mysteriously didn't tell anybody before 9/11.
He wrote it down in an envelope. He put it in a bank vault.
Waited 5 years after 9/11, didn't tell anybody, and then brought the story out mysteriously around the same time that he released a movie called America: Freedom to Fascism. Weird. And he has $2 million in tax liens and has a vested interest in really trying to sell this movie. How do you sell it? I know a secret Rockefeller guy who told me about 9/11 ahead of time. Therefore, everything in my movie must be based on totally real stuff. Now, I'll read to you from a New York Times review of his documentary, From Freedom to Fascism.
Okay.
Quote, near the film's beginning, Mr. Russo says, and others appear on screen asserting, that the IRS has refused every request to show any law making Americans liable for an income tax on their wages. Yet, among those thanked in the credits for their help in making the film is Anthony Burke, an IRS spokesman. Mr. Burke said that when Mr. Russo called him asking what law required the payment of income taxes on wages, he sent Mr. Russo a link to documents, including Title 26 of the United States Code, citing the specific sections that require income tax to be paid on wages. Title 26 says on its face that it is a law enacted by Congress, but Mr. Russo denied this fact.
Oh, okay.
So he's just completely lying about shit. Oh, also,
the New York Times review also included that Bette Midler should get a Best Picture nod.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
The film,
Best Actress.
The film
yeah.
also includes a brief interview with Sheldon Cohen, who was an IRS commissioner in the Johnson administration. Mr. Cohen said that Mr. Russo used editing that, quote, twists my views to create a false impression.
Yeah.
So you get the sense that there's multiple people who were involved with this fucking stupid documentary that he put out who have come out publicly and said, oh no, I did send him those documents that very clearly answer the question he asked. And in the documentary says, oh, no one will respond to my requests and give me documents.
Right.
Or you have someone else who comes out and says, hey, this guy lied about me using editing. And now he's coming on Alex Jones's show, who has a staunchly credible reputation as a truth teller.
Right.
He's coming on here and saying all this bullshit that's completely unverifiable about a guy named Nick Rockefeller who doesn't even appear to be a member of the Rockefeller family. That say, using him because
that's my favorite twist.
Because that's his name, he's using him to say, oh, I knew about 9/11 almost a year before, but yet I didn't do anything, which also probably makes you culpable for the deaths of 3,000 people. Which isn't great.
That's right. You didn't do a goddamn thing about it.
So you want to criticize Bush for not stopping it based on prior intelligence? What the fuck did you do? Also, why didn't you tell Alex Jones back then? Why don't you tell someone else who could do something, scream about it? Anyway, my point is this guy's a con man.
Yeah.
This guy is a big old con man.
Yeah.
And it's so foundational for Alex Jones's worldview that this definitely deserves being talked about. Now, there's a lot of other stuff in the interview that we're just, for the sake of time, we don't really have the time to get into. But suffice it to say, the rest of the stuff is mostly like this.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, he makes a brave pronouncement about the war on terror.
Look, this whole war on terror is a fraud. It's a farce. It's very difficult to say it out loud because people are intimidated against saying it. Because if you say it, they want to make you into a nutcase. The truth has to come out. That's why I'm doing this interview. The fact of the matter happens to be that the whole war on terror is a fraud. It's a farce. Yeah, there's a war going on in Iraq because we invaded Iraq. And people over there fighting, you know. But the war on terror, that's a joke.
Again, you could have gone to any protest.
Yeah,
I
mean, he's right. He's not just right. At the time, if you said the war on terror was a fraud, the news media would be like, you're a nutcase. You're a lunatic. That whole thing.
I disagree. Well, I don't know if the news is going to cover what Aaron Russo said.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But Aaron Russo is a nutcase, but the war on terror is also a fraud.
But that is a very common, very middle-of-the-road position in most liberal activist communities predating 2006.
Right.
So the
media sold the war on terror in the first place. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that as a larger concept during this time, I remember clearly that so many people who were like, this is bullshit, would be, you're an American and you're a lunatic and all that stuff. I
still don't think that makes it hard to say.
No. Well,
on Alex Jones's fucking show.
No, of course not for him on Alex's show. But at the time, there were plenty of people whose political careers were ruined by coming out and saying that this is bullshit.
Name one.
Dave.
Okay, Dave.
He works IT.
Yeah. Dave from IT makes a repeat
appearance. God damn, Dave from IT.
I don't know. Anyway, in this next clip, we get some more news from the Rockefeller guy.
Okay.
About women's lib.
Oh, why would you jump there?
And he started laughing. He said, Aaron, what do you think women's liberation was about? And, I said, I had pretty conventional thinking about it at that point. I said, I think it's about women having the right to work, getting equal pay with men, just like they won the right to vote, you know? And he started to laugh. He said, you're an idiot. And I said, why am I an idiot? He said, let me tell you what that was about. The Rockefellers funded that. We funded Women's Lib, you know? And we're the ones who got all over the newspapers and television, the Rockefeller Foundation. He says, and you want to know why? He says, there were two primary reasons. And they were, one reason was, we couldn't tax half the population.
I think that's probably legitimate.
Okay. The second reason was, now we get the kids in school at an early age. We can indoctrinate the kids how to think. It breaks up the family. The kids start looking at the state as the family, as the school, as the officials, as their family, not as the parents teaching them. And so those are the two primary reasons for Women's Lib, which I thought up to that point was a noble thing.
So we all know that public school didn't exist before Women's Lib.
Right.
So there's that.
Yeah, but they didn't. They got into schools later.
Right. The kindergarten
had to be brought in,
which kindergarten taken from the German word kindergarten.
Yeah, where they garden children.
Right.
See, there you go.
I would say
we funded Women's Lib.
Well, I think that
was
you,
there like a
no, because I think if you do look back on it, like after, like even just as another example, like after Margaret Sanger had already been, putting her crusade for women's health for years and years with no help, Rockefeller Foundation did come in and fund her a little bit later.
Good,
but so you could
they didn't fund all of Women's Lib though.
No. But you can probably find examples where they did support like causes or gave grants, endowments, stuff like that to people like Margaret Sanger throughout history. You could probably find that, but that doesn't mean that they funded Women's Lib or it was some sort of fake thing.
Right.
Now you take the example of a fake thing. You have people like Edward Bernays with his campaign to get women smoking and stuff like that. Now that is a fake co-opting of Women's Lib type ideas, but that's not like the bigger picture of it wasn't that. And to a much finer point, this is grossly patriarchal. Like this sort of idea that he's selling because.
Well, he thought that women's, liberation was a noble thing. And then he discovered that men should rule the world.
I guess. But like, even if like all, like there were women who didn't want to go along with the idea of I need to have kids and, I should have a career.
Right.
And the idea that he's sort of invalidating those people's perspective. As saying like, oh, no, it was all Rockefeller funded. It was all these elites that I'm imagining, that pushed this through. It takes away a lot of the agency of the women who actually did fight for change.
Yeah. And also it didn't quite get pushed through. So
not entirely.
Yeah.
So this brings
once again, the globalists are, not real and bad at their jobs.
Again, he's not calling them globalists, which is interesting. So in these next two clips. We get to hear Aaron Russo say some stuff that's shockingly familiar.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just gonna tell you this up front. And I hope this doesn't color the way you hear this clip.
Uh-huh.
But I got chills when I was listening to these clips. Because I believe that what he's about to say, Alex has stolen his bit. I think that-
Did he meet three men in a hot tub?
No, that would be amazing.
I was with these three men in a hot tub and then a globalist came up to me.
I think Alex heard this in this interview. Aaron Russo died shortly after this and he just took it on as his own backstory because it's very familiar to us nowadays. But I mean, I don't know. I haven't listened to a ton of Alex from like 2004 or 2005.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this was a piece of his past back then, but I imagine it wasn't. I think it just comes from this.
Okay.
I killed Noah.
I used to say to him that I never really did that because that wasn't where I was coming from. You know, as much as I like you, Nick, you know, your ways and my ways were on the opposite side of the fence. You know, I don't believe in enslaving people, you know, and,
And he would come back with, oh, I do? Or?
Well, it would be more like, you
it's
know.
It's better for them.
Well, it's more like, you know, how do I put it? It was like, what do you care about them? What do you care about those people? What difference does it make to you? Take care of your own life. Do the best you can for you and your family. What do the rest of the people mean to you? They don't mean anything to you. They're just serfs. They're just people. You know, it was just a lack of caring, you know, and that's just not who I was. It was just sort of like cold, you know, I used to say to him, what's the point of all this? You have all the money in the world you need. You have all the power you need. What's the point? You know, what's the end goal? And he said the end goal is to get everybody chipped.
So you hear, that's silly, but you
that's a weird conversation.
You hear there him talking about how Nicholas Rockefeller was trying to recruit him in.
So many people.
They were trying to recruit him in, but he couldn't do it because I don't want to disrespect the humanity of other people. Now listen to this next clip where he talks about it even more. And this is even more familiar.
Get offered $10 million?
Maybe.
Because that's the ballpark.
It's in the ballpark.
Successful in the movie business. And I saw the truth of what was happening. I tried to express it to the people. And rather than having me express it to the people, they wanted me to join their side.
So real quick, already.
I could have been Glenn Beck.
Or
could have been Glenn Beck, baby.
Or Alex Stone.
I had million-dollar movie deals.
He's already been in movies.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in so many big movies. He's been offered tons of movies. They're trying to reach out to me. They're trying to get me in, but I don't want to do it. So anyway.
Because I was a mover and a shaker, and rather than me opposing them, to join them. It was real simple. And he tried to recruit me into that situation, and I didn't go for it.
Did he get angry when you didn't go for it?
No, no. And, you know, it's like, you know, I remember when...
Already, I have to think that, first of all, it's very clear that Alex stole this, because his response wasn't, that happened to me too.
Yeah.
So anyway.
My thing that I'm amazed at right now is, Alex is a way better interviewer in 2006.
Yeah.
I mean, he's asking leading questions, he's letting his guest talk, and he's doing it.
I think, well, he references that
he's not a good interviewer, but he's a better interviewer.
He references that they had a conversation the night before, and I have to assume the night before he told him some of these bombshell pieces, and so he knows that, like, let's not step on this, I'm going to get a fake Rockefeller story out of this.
Right.
One time he said to me, you join us, so you have an ID card, Aaron, you know, you have a chip, and your chip will say KMA on it. And I said, what does KMA mean? He said, it means kiss my ass.
Whoa!
And anybody stops you, a cop or whatever, and you show them your card or your chip, and they'll know to leave you alone, because you're one of us, you know? And, you know, why are you fighting for the people for? What is that about? The people are just, you know, they have to be ruled. They have to be... You know, the Constitution, what you're standing for is only for a few people. It's only a few individuals that can live that way, you know. And we believe that it's best for society to be ruled by an elite people who control everything.
This is so Alex's shit, man.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Right up the alley.
I didn't fully...
Even down to the stupid, we're going to put KMA on your chip.
Right.
Like, okay, all right.
I mean, Alex talks a lot about, like, getting an offer of, like, you have a free pass.
Yeah.
You'll be one of us.
Yeah.
Why do you care about these sheep, these lemmings?
And there's always a stupid code that is obviously stupid. Like, fucking put badass motherfucker on your wallet, and that's the same bullshit that they're
More
saying.
More or less, Mr. Officer, I believe I'm a badass motherfucker.
I apologize. What's in the case?
I mean, it's the same sort of thinking that leads you to, like, those people who are selling the laminated don't vaccinate me cards.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have this card. You can't do it. You can't plug me.
Ha ha! You fooled. I have a postcard that I spent $25 on with the, what was it? The phrase that got you out of it? Yeah.
The phrase that pays.
Yay.
So I was, this is a perfect example of something that I definitely watched, like, 10 years ago or something like that, you know, 7-8 years ago. I have watched this interview before, but knowing that what I know about Alex now, I saw it through completely new eyes.
Yeah.
Like, that story to me was horrifying to hear, because I know from other looking into this guy that he's a liar.
Right.
And then I know what Alex has sold about his life story since then. So I have really strong confidence that what happened was, this is Aaron Russo's pretend bit. If you're a comic, that's his bit. And then he, you know, he's not super mainstream. He never got on Comedy Central, something like that. He dies a year later. You're like, I'm going to do that bit.
Right.
That was a good bit.
Right.
That's a great bit.
He Robin Williams did.
The idea that the globalists have reached out to me and tried to get me to join their team explicitly, that's a good bit. And he's just stolen that bit.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
It's a great bit. I mean, it's bullshit, but it's a good bit.
I mean, he should have paid for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Help him out with that tax lien.
Exactly,
yeah,
right? Yeah. Come on, man.
I'm not sure Alex had the money in 2006.
Look, people buy bits. It happens. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, so we have one more sort of bullshit thing that Russo says before we wrap this up, and here's that.
He even mentioned to me once they were having a real problem trying to solve the Israel Palestinian problem, and he talked to me once about they were playing with the idea of bringing Israel to Arizona, you know, and taking all the people from Israel and giving everybody $1 million and setting up Israel in the state of Arizona.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
That's pretty wild.
There, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of Judaism just being like, guys, we got the math wrong. Our holy land is actually Arizona.
Right.
Our bad. Our bad, guys.
It's also kind of insulting that it's like, hey, fuck it. We'll give them $1 million and
yeah,
that's fine.
And then it's Arizona.
Now consider that.
That's almost anti-Semitic and like that the Jews will take. The Jews will just take money instead of.
Now
yeah.
Consider in 2006, the population of Israel was 7 million people. Give them each $1 million. Put them into Arizona as millionaires, and that will somehow fix the Israel-Palestine issue.
Done.
It doesn't solve anything.
Does it?
No.
Are you sure?
I mean...
You know what? There are a lot of ideas that you don't know are bad until you try them.
Well, here's why it wouldn't solve that. Because first of all...
give me a reason, Dan.
Well, the people...
Because I can't see any.
The people who believe in Israel the most aggressively would never take that deal. Because it's not about, like, just being like, oh, we can have Arizona? Great. It's not about that. It is about the holy land that exists there.
It's kind of pretty important.
It's geographically based. So even if you got rid of, let's say, 2 million of the 7 million people that are there, you're still going to have a lot of people who are still enforcing apartheid government.
And that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's going to come into money.
It's going to come into money.
You know what?
What's that? That's... Even if you have $2 million, that's $2 trillion.
More than that.
Yeah.
Much more than that.
Is that much more than that?
Yeah,
what,
that's
a million
that's
times
$1,000 a
oh,
person.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, boy.
Yeah, I don't even know what that number is called.
No, a trillion.
Millions of millions?
A trillion is $100,000 per person. So I guess it would be $1 quadrillion?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. Now our math is bad.
It's not important because this is all bullshit. But I mean, I guess a secondary issue would be then, what are you doing bringing 7 million more people into Arizona? How is that going to affect the demographics?
Well, the Arizonans love Jews. Everybody knows that.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. That's certainly. One thing that Arizona is famous for, loving Jewish people.
I'm not even saying from a demographic standpoint that way. I just mean adding 7 million more people into a state would throw everything into complete chaos.
How many people live in Arizona now?
Of the
7 million isn't that big for Arizona, right?
Of the 7 million that are in Israel, though, too, you got to assume that, like, that's including Palestinians. So I guess it wouldn't be all of them.
Well, and they would have to take their rock with them.
So I would say.
Or their dome. They might pick one or the other.
In 2006, the population of Arizona was 6 million.
See, there you go.
So you would double the population.
Yeah, nobody even lives there.
Yeah. This is cockamamie nonsense.
Give him a lake.
The idea that he's saying that Rockefeller,
Nick Rockefeller.
Right, is saying this to him makes me believe that Rockefeller might just be a guy who likes to talk shit. He's just a lawyer guy who Russo has assumed is part of some elite faction because of his last name and is like, yeah.
I really like that idea. I like that idea as fiction.
Right.
The idea of just like that's a great alternate history fiction book is instead of after the Holocaust, we create Israel's estate. We're just like, have Arizona.
Right. It's both,
you guys want it?
They're both deserty.
It's nice.
They're deserty.
Yeah. You guys get it.
So, I mean, this brings us to the end of another investigation of a side con man in the InfoWars lineage. But I want to bring one thing sharply into focus. At no point during any of this interview does Aaron Russo or Alex Jones bring up George Soros in any way. They don't reference him.
That is a good point.
They don't talk about him at all.
Zero Soros. And we're in Rockefeller territory. Soros
exactly.
is right up there.
Exactly. But yeah. This is a time when Soros was not a thing that Alex thought about or cared about.
Interesting.
It's all Rockefeller stuff. Hmm. Ford Foundation, perhaps, maybe we'll get a plug in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's interesting to me that you have someone who he's purporting as being on the inside and knowing a arch globalist family member and having the invitation from them. He's coming in and spilling the beans, and at no point does Soros, the Open Society Foundation, come up at all.
Nope.
Wonder why.
Interesting.
I wonder why.
Fascinating.
Right. More on that to come in the
future. All right, Dan. Tease your balls off.
I'm not teasing anything because I don't actually know the answer to this question, but it's not right. You know, it's
yeah.
based on Alex Jones's own reporting of his skeptical history. he should absolutely be like, what do you know about Soros?
Right.
If he thinks he's a Nazi
if you know a Rockefeller, the Rockefellers know Soros.
They're intimately involved.
They're all globalists. They go to their meetings.
And pretending that in 2006 he didn't rank is bullshit. That's bullshit. He was very actively involved in politics, very actively involved in funding foundations and shit like that in 2006. It's nonsense. We'll see. I want to learn more about it.
Absolutely.
But it's fucked up. This is, if anywhere, there should be a fingerprint of Soros on Alex's past. It's when he's interviewing this guy who told him he knew about 9/11 ahead of time.
Probably. You would think that Soros would have been like the main boogeyman from the start.
You would think.
Or that there would have been an investigation. When we go back through 2015 and do that whole long ass investigation, if Soros then comes up, it seems like there would be a corroborating InfoWars investigation during that time of like, well, we looked into the Rockefellers, we looked into the Ford Foundation, and we found another guy. We found a guy that's behind there.
You would think
they found some reason instead of just a narrative emerging whole cloth out of nowhere.
But Alex doesn't do any research, as you see when he brings up the Grace Commission. Like,
exactly.
He doesn't understand what they actually said. He just thinks like, oh, I'll take that soundbite of no money, all of it went to the interest,
right,
when it's actually saying all the stuff that we didn't consider waste went to paying off the interest, when waste is something that very debatably is not waste.
No. Not just very debatably.
Alex doesn't do any work. He doesn't do any research. And you can see that even in 2006, I was hoping we'd go back and he'd have a much more strong grasp on information and stuff like that.
Nah.
But no, he's playing the same fast and loose games he does with stuff now. So he can,
he's just more deferent. He doesn't have the same ego.
No.
Not at all.
No, because the globalist hadn't, imaginarily reached out to him yet.
Ah, that's true.
Aaron Russo hadn't died and he didn't discover
how important he really was.
Right, right.
Until after he stole Aaron Russo's backstory.
Right, exactly. So anyway, if you'd like our show, you can go to our website, knowledgefight.com.
You can follow us on, Twitter @knowledge_fight.
That's correct. Also, we're on Facebook.
What else? You can go to iTunes.
Yes, iTunes.
You can go to iTunes. You could download our podcast.
Indeed.
You could go to the internet and I don't know how the internet works, but write a letter and send it to the internet and tell people about our show.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Tell the internet people.
Give yourself a return address, write internet, and the post office will get it there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before we end this, I'd like to say. I want not, for Aaron Russo to be the person you tell to fuck himself.
I got the feeling that Aaron Russo wasn't the guy.
He's a con man for sure.
Right.
He should fuck himself on some level, but I do feel sad that he died.
Yeah.
Almost immediately after that. Yeah. Not immediately, but shortly after this interview.
Bladder cancer fucked him, really.
Well, and he'd been diagnosed for years, so I think that he knew that the stakes were lower.
Right.
For him to come on Alex's show and say crazy shit.
Yeah. He's playing with house money.
I would say maybe... I mean, Reagan's in the running.
Oh, Reagan can go fuck himself.
All right.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.